Welcome back to the Deferred Action Podcast. In this episode, Dana and I have a conversation with Kevin Alexander. Kevin is a Brooklyn-based fashion photographer who was born in El Salvador and immigrated to the United States at age 12. His passion for photography has been published in renowned magazines such as Vogue, Elle, and Nylon. He's an award-winning hair photographer, and some of his clients include L'Oreal, Aveda, and Balmain Paris. Some of the highlights of this episode include life in El Salvador, the motivation behind his photography career, the dualities of traveling as a DACA recipient, and he shares wisdom for dreamers who want to be open about their status. With that, please enjoy these wise words from a creative savant, Mr. Kevin Alexander.
Tell us, what did you have for breakfast today?
Ooh, today I had a veggie smoothie. So, cucumber, spinach, apple, strawberries. So I guess it was a veggie and fruit smoothie.
Oh my God, that's so funny because I had a smoothie today for breakfast and it had kale, apple, protein, and pineapple and spinach.
Yes, those are the best. I've been doing this for over 2 weeks now, and I'm starting to actually crave them. You know, like you wake up and you're like, okay, I'm in the mood for a smoothie. It was a little bit of a challenge the first 3-4 days, but I'm used to it now.
That's good. Yeah, you gotta get your immune system up, and all those amazing fruits, they help you during, especially during these times.
Yes. You know, we've been inside for too long and we had a lot of time to be baking and drinking. but yeah, trying to keep a healthy diet.
That's great, man. I love that. You know, it's important today. So the first question we'll ask Kevin, who is Kevin Alexander today? Who are you?
Kevin Alexander today. Man, that's a tough question because I feel like often when I believe that I know who I am, then I start questioning myself, you know, like, do I really know who Kevin is? But, you know, I want to say right now, Kevin is, you know, a fashion photographer living in New York, in Brooklyn, New York. This is something that I always wanted to do since I was a teenager. So Kevin, right now, it's someone that it's living his dream. And I want to say it's someone that has finally found a purpose when it comes to my career. I feel that for the longest, I was just taking photos with no reason. And lately, I feel like there's a purpose. There's a purpose on why I do what I do. And I'm enjoying myself, you know. For the longest, I felt that I was just focusing all my energy on becoming someone and trying to make things perfect. But with everything happening, and I feel like for the past 2 years, I've realized that there is more important things, you know, than just work and just your career. But, you know, I'm not saying that my career is not important anymore, because it is. It's what I always wanted to do, and I'm enjoying it. But I'm learning to have a balance.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so, you know, really appreciate that. That was a lovely answer, Kevin. We learned that you migrated to the U.S. at age 12, right? So could you describe early life in El Salvador? Can you tell us the name of the little pueblo that you lived in, the town?
Yes. So I was born and raised in a little town called Metapan, which is a village that's in the department of Santa Ana. I grew up there till the age of 12. My parents got divorced when I was, I want to say like around 8. That my mom moved to the United States, and I had to stay there with my grandparents. So it was my grandparents and my brother. You know, I didn't see my mom for 5 years. So that was pretty challenging. My dad was around. He was a good dad. He wasn't the greatest husband. He was a karate instructor. So I grew up learning martial arts with him for, you know, for a good 4 to 5 years. And everything, you know, that I remember is just, you know, being a kid, and no, around that time there was no cell phones, no technology. So most of the time I spent my time, you know, running through the forest, playing in the dirt, just biking, just, you know, having a great time, not thinking about problems or work. So it's just living my best life.
Yeah, age 12 is it's a little older than most DACA recipients. I think the average age is 7. You got a chance to experience the Salvadorian education system. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I want to say that it's a little more strict, you know, because I remember when I landed it. First place that we lived when we moved to the U.S., it was in California. And I was often comparing my school back in El Salvador to the schools in California. You know, over there, everyone is wearing a uniform. You show up and they make sure that your nails are clean, that your uniform, it's well put together. Classes start super early, so I was waking up at 5:30 in the morning, having breakfast like around 6 a.m., and then we had to make a 30 to 40 minute walk to our school. So it was my brother and me. My brother was around like 6, 7 when we moved to the U.S., so it was both of us. And like you said, you know, most of DACA recipients are around that age. My brother is one of them.
You're the older brother, right?
I'm the oldest. It's yes. Just,
what's your brother's name?
His name is Darwin. So we, yes, it's three of us. When my mom moved to the U.S., she was pregnant. So we didn't see my mom or my youngest sibling for about five years. So we kind of like missed, you know, that time together. But yeah, you know, it's interesting because the three of us are a bit different and we remember different things, but at the end of the day, we complement, you know, we complement each other and we are connected, even though the youngest was born here and he really didn't experience what we experience. He knows about all of the challenges that we had to go through to be here.
I'm the eldest of five boys. And man, I know the pressures of being an older brother and making sure that your younger brothers are steered in the right, you know, direction and making the right choices in life. Is that something that you always put on yourself in terms of, you know, growing up in this country and being the eldest brother that's also a DACA recipient?
Definitely. I feel like me as an older brother, at some point I had to become the dad. Like I was telling you earlier, my parents got divorced. My mom immigrated to the U.S. first. For 5 years, we tried to look for ways to get here and be together. You know, at some point, my dad, my brother, and me, we, you know, took an adventure and we got here. When we got to the U.S., my dad sticked around for about a year. They tried to work things out with my mom, but you know, things didn't go the way they planned, and he ended up going back. He went back. I remember the last thing he said was, "It's really hard here. You know, being an immigrant, especially if you're undocumented, it's hard. And he felt he was going to have a better chance back in El Salvador. The main reason we got, you know, we came to the U.S., I feel like I don't usually talk about this, but I think this will be a good opportunity for me to, you know, talk about it. The main reason why we moved to the U.S. was because my dad was being, He was being threatened, and he was threatened by gang members. And obviously they went for us. They went for my brother and me. And the first thing he thought was, I need to get you out of here as soon as possible. It doesn't matter how, when, like, I, you know, it has to happen like now. So that was the reason why. But then also because it was time, they felt like it was time for us to be with my mom.
Do you think if your dad wasn't threatened, that either way you would have made the adventure to the U.S.?
Not. See, because for us, it was like we were not expecting it. My dad showed up, and I remember he was, you know, he was crying, he was scared, he was shaking. And we literally left the next day. He had everything all set up. He knew his connections. He knew where to go, how long, how much. We didn't get a chance to say goodbye to any of our friends. Well, everything happened so quick. But again, we were kids. It was literally an adventure for a couple of weeks. We felt like we were on a trip.
And I think it's important that you talked about that, because I feel like some people may not, you know, they just say, oh, you know, people come here just to live the American dream.
Right.
But you know, in some cases, like your case, and actually my case too, one of the reasons why we left Colombia was because, you know, my dad got, you know, was being threatened to, and he even got kidnapped. And, you know, I think that like scares your family, and you're like, you know, at that time, my parents weren't thinking about them. You know, thankfully my dad, like, you know, nothing bad happened to him, but he was like, you know, we can't be living in this country where, you know, right now, you know, especially back there in Colombia, you know, it wasn't great times. You know, we were dealing with, you know, a lot of, you know, going back and forth with like who the president is and then the cartel taking over and a lot of corruption. So, but there was dark times, and, you know, we fled that because we didn't want anything bad happening. My dad didn't want anything bad happening to my mom or me, who was only 5 years old and at the time didn't understand what was happening. So I think it's important to, you know, say that, you know, not sometimes we don't just come to this country just to like look for the American dream. You know, sometimes we're just looking for safety.
Yes. And, you know, I try to speak about this with my friends that are, you know, U.S. citizens. I'm like, do you think people will risk their lives, you know, walk across the country for days, risking everything, risking their kids just for nothing, you know? But, you know, I want to get to the question you asked, Google, you know, being the oldest, you know, it is a challenge. So we get here, my dad goes back. I was mad. I was really mad. I felt like betrayed, you know? Like, I felt like he just brought us here to a new country, to a new place, new culture, new everything. And then he just decided to leave. I remember the last thing, you know, I told him, I was like, you know what's going to happen to you, right? If you leave. And he was like, yes, I'm aware. So I told him that I didn't want to talk to him ever again. If he leaving, I was like, don't get in touch with us. So he left. I didn't know anything about him for 6 months. I remember at that time I had gotten my new first phone, and I received a text message, and it was from him. He was saying, you know, asking how we were, how we were holding up, how was the new start. I ignore his text. I didn't talk to him. Then another 6 months passed. I remember I started having dreams with him for some reason. And I woke up and I told my mom, I was like, I had a weird dream with my dad. And the dream was he was hiding, you know, like I was in the dream and I came face to face with him and he was scared. And it looked like he was being chased and he was like behind my back and he was telling me to, you know, just to hide. And I woke up and I told my mom and she was like, maybe you should, you know, give him a call. Maybe he's thinking about you guys. But I was so mad, you know, I was a teenager. I was going through a lot. I was in high school. So at that time, I had already found out what undocumented meant because everyone in my class started getting their driver's license. And I'm sure you guys went through this probably dealing with that. But I'm also, you know, dealing with my sexuality. You know, I'm thinking, you know, do I like boys? Do I like girls? Like, I don't really know what's happening. So I'm going through all of this stuff. And, you know, my mom was like, give your dad a call. Talk to him. And I didn't. A week after this dream, we get a call. It was a call from the emergency room. He was shot. He was shot 12 times. And he was still alive. He was in the, you know, he was in the emergency room. He was asking to see me. He was asking to see my brother. And that's when it kind of hit me, you know, like I already kind of had an idea what being undocumented was with the whole driver's license thing. But then when we told my mom, let's go, you know, let's get a flight. Let's go see him. We have no time. That's when she said, she was like, Kevin, you have to realize that the moment you step outside of the U.S., you're not going to be able to come back. She explained it. My dad went on a coma, you know, hours after that, and he died. And, you know, for years, we struggle with that, not being able to have some sort of closure with, you know, with him. But yeah, you know, after 16, 17, technically I had to become like a dad figure for my youngest siblings.
That's an amazing answer to the original question, my friend. And I have to say, one of the subjects we brought up in our last episode is, you know, mental health in the Hispanic community and how big of a problem it is, you know? And so how did you deal with that trauma? You know, what did you do to deal with that?
This is how my photography career started, because I felt like I was falling into depression. And I told my mom, I felt like I'm getting depressed. I feel like there is something wrong with me. You know, being a Latino, growing up in a Latino family, I don't know if you guys realize this, but people don't really talk about depression and anxiety and, you know, all of this stuff. Like, my family just really don't talk about it. So I remember me telling my mom, I feel like there's something wrong with me. And I was like, I feel like I need to do something. And I was about to finish high school. And I knew that I wanted to do something within the arts. I've always been a very creative person. And I wanted to go to the Art Institute. But for me to go to the Art Institute was going to be $95,000 plus, you know, equipment. And it's just going to be too expensive. And it was three of us and my mom, single mom, having three jobs. So there was no way that I was going to be able to do that. So I told my mom, you know, can you get me a camera? She got me a $200 camera from Walmart as a gift. And I started taking photos. I started taking photos of my high school friends. And one thing led to another. People started paying me for my work. And photography was pretty much my escape from depression and to keep my mind busy. And you know, the rest is history.
It's, I'm glad that you found a way to deal with it. And I guess I wanted to ask you, you know, your dad was a fascinating guy. Like, he was a martial arts instructor. He taught you, you know, the movement of body. What can you say about that?
It was a lot of, you know, with him, he helped me a lot. Both of my parents were creatives, and I feel like they didn't even know they were according to my future. You know, like, when my mom, I have this conversation, she's always like, you know, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I'm sorry you had to go through this. But reality is that she was there. I was a child. I was paying attention. So my dad, you know, he was a karate instructor, but she was also a carpenter. And he also had a car shop, a mechanic shop. And I was always around. So with him, I feel like I learned body coordination, discipline, competition, meditation. I learned how to be efficient, you know, how to figure things out by myself without people telling me how or what to do. I learned how to change a tire, you know. So he, you know, when I say, you know, my dad, he was a great dad. He was just wasn't a great husband. But he was always there for me. And my mom, she was a hairstylist. Same thing, you know, she had her home hair salon. And I used to see her waking up at 5:30. You know, for certain events. And I used to see how she was making her clients happy, how she had to be creative with what their customers were asking. So I feel like all of that has a lot to do with the person that I am now. And so, you know, I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful. I guess I always just been a very curious person. Like I feel like I grew up being the quiet one. Like, I barely speak when I was, you know, growing up, but I was watching. I was paying attention. I was looking at what people were doing, and I, you know, like they say, when you're a child, it's, you're like a sponge, and you suck everything. Like, you just learn.
We're, as a DACA recipient, you know, you're always in between two worlds. And there's an outsider perspective that's developed because of it. Have you been able to tap into that in your career, the outsider perspective?
I think so. I feel like we all can relate. You know, I feel like this is how we all connect to each other. Because not just my career, but recently, well, not recently, 4 years ago, when advanced parole was a thing, I was finally able to go back. I went back to El Salvador to visit my grandparents, but it was also to have closure with my dad. You know, I really wanted to see his grave and have that moment. But, you know, being there, it made me realize that, you know, people over there doesn't see you as you're from there. But people over here, also, it's like, it's really hard to fit in. So it's like you're always in the middle. You know, it's weird.
It's an identity crisis, yeah. Right?
Yes, it's, you know, I feel like the older I get, the more I'm getting to know myself and where I'm from. And the more I like to say, you know, I'm Salvadoran, this is my culture. This is how it is. But reality was that when I was there, they keep on calling you, you know, oh, yes, the American, you know, like
that,
this.
Yeah, we were just having that conversation. We were like, you know, it's like whenever I talk to my tías in Colombia, they're like, oh, la gringa, like you're like, you don't know any of our jokes because you don't understand them. You don't understand like our language. And then like when you're over here, like obviously I may sound a little bit American because of my accent. I don't have a thick accent, but you know, I definitely don't look American. I'm tan, black hair. So it's like, they're like, oh, this Hispanic girl. And I'm just like, you know, and I struggled with that during high school, especially. That was a rough year because it's like, I kept telling myself, am I American or am I Colombian? I feel American and I know that I'm Colombian, but I don't even know Colombia. But then at the same time, I feel like I'm not accepted in the American culture here. So I was like, what am I?
Yes. Yeah, see, it's tough. I feel like you learn to live with it, but it's always there. You always have to kind of like navigate with this whole identity situation. But, you know, it's there. With my career, I feel like, has it affected me? Like 5-6 years ago, I had an agent, and I remember this agent, they used to send me, because I grew up in Colorado. I grew up in Denver. That's where my mom and my brothers are. But at that time, I was already booking jobs here in New York. So I was coming, you know, for a week, 2 weeks, just to network and do a couple jobs and getting to know the industry. And my agent used to tell me, she was like, when you're there, Kevin, don't say you're from Colorado. Don't say you're from Denver. Be, you know, say, yes, I'm from El Salvador. I'm from Central America. And she's like, don't try to hide your accent. And she was great. She used to tell me, you know, like, be yourself. Be, you know, aware of who you are. And people are going to love you. You know, people are going to respect you. You know, I feel like I didn't talk about it. Like, I feel like I didn't talk about immigration at all with any of my coworkers or like my team members, or no one knew until Trump happened. I made a video, you know, a video of me on set, and I have like an over voice talking about who Kevin is and what, you know, the program is all about. And it made a whole controversy because people, I had friends, I had co-workers who had voted for Trump. And no one had any idea that, you know, that I was being affected by all of this. And when I realized how important it is to, you know, to share your stories and not to try to be someone else. And since then, you know, I've been very open about this. And whatever opportunity I get to share my story and my experiences and where I come from, like, I take it. I feel like, to me, this is kind of like a purpose now. You know, I have a platform, I have some sort of community, some sort of industry, and my goal is to always bring some awareness to this issue.
Yeah, and I love that. I love the way that you did it. You were able to express your artistic side. We watched your YouTube video and we loved it. And you know, now that it brings me back, you know, when you know, this week has definitely been a huge week for DACA, especially on June 15th. It was the 8th anniversary of when President Obama announced DACA. After hearing this huge announcement, like, what was your reaction? Do you remember what you were doing that day? You know, I know for me, like, I was at the point in my life where I was in high school, I was about to graduate high school, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm about to turn 18 and I don't even have a driver's license. It's embarrassing to have to like keep asking my friends to like drive me to the mall or drive me to my work. And so that, and my main concern was like, am I going to be able to go to college? And, you know, after that announcement, I was able to finally, like, you know, breathe in and out and say, okay, I'm going to college and I'm getting my license. I would love to know what your reaction was when you heard the news.
Yeah, so you were in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was already out of high school. How this happened. Yeah, I remember that day clearly. I was at IHOP. It was in the morning. We were having breakfast. I was dating someone from Mexico who was also in the same situation. And, I remember around that time, I was starting to get bigger jobs that require to fill out, you know, to fill out forms with your social security number, your tax forms and all of this stuff that, you know, as an adult, you just learn as you go. But being undocumented, those type of things, kind of like you grow up like being scared of those things. So I was letting go of a lot of opportunities that were coming my way. So I remember when we saw, I think it was Facebook. Yeah, Facebook was still around. Yeah, well, I mean, was around already.
Not MySpace.
Not MySpace, no. I think it was, yeah, we saw it on Facebook. And I remember, like, we saved that receipt, the receipt from IHOP, because we knew the requirement. No, but it was because I knew the requirements were going to be kind of like, not easy, and I knew they were gonna say where were you, or just proof that you were in the country when this big announcement.
Wow! Oh my gosh, that's crazy that I didn't even think about that. And you were
awesome. The requirements. That's one of the requirements that said, you know, like that you had to prove, because I was already out of high school. All my bills and my apartment and everything was under my mom's name because I couldn't do anything, so I couldn't, you know, like put anything under my name, really. So there was literally no track for a good, you know, for a few years of like me. So I was like, this is, I have this receipt. I have this, you know, I pay with a credit card. So I was already thinking about all of that. You know, like this is going to come in handy somehow.
Let me ask you a question we've been asking all of our recipients. Who was your first American friend?
I want to say just my high school friends who I still have, who I still keep in touch with. I feel like I ended up relating a lot to my Mexican friends. You know, because I just couldn't find any Salvadorans in my high school. So I ended up with all my Mexican friends. A lot of them either had like a green card or they were born here. And knowing their culture and them speaking Spanish, but also being, you know, from here, it just, that's where, you know, they kind of like took me under their wing. And they didn't even know, like I never said anything about my situation in high school, but I feel like I blend in, you know?
Blending in, yeah. We were literally just talking about that too. It's like in high school, like you were just trying to like blend in and not trying to like, you know, prove me. You know, I didn't want anyone to feel sorry for me for my situation. So I just kind of wanted to be like, I want to be known as like the girl who just fits in with everybody and that is it. And it's so funny because, I mean, now that we've launched this podcast, I've had, you know, old friends from high school that have messaged me and I haven't talked to them in a while. And they've just been like, oh, my gosh, I had no idea that you and I were in the same situation.
Right.
And it's like, you know, there were so many people around me that were in the same situation. And I was over here thinking I was the minority because in the area that I grew up with, you know, it was, you know, Hispanic people were a minority. It was mostly American people. So I was over here feeling like I was left out. And then in reality, you know, there was other people who were with me, but no one wanted to come out and speak out about their status because, you know, we just wanted to fit in.
Isn't it that funny though, that it's the same with me, you know, like I found out about other undocumented people, like after high school. I'm like, we spent like 4 years around each other, and I feel like things would have been easier if we were together, you know, now. Like, but yeah, like, you know, in high school, like I didn't really talk about it. I feel like I started surrounding myself with people from like different cultures and people who didn't speak Spanish, like after high school, because of work, because of what I wanted to do. I was pretty much forced to, which was great. You know, it's just something new.
That's great. And so, you know, we're incredibly impressed by your work.
Oh my gosh, I'm a huge fan.
I'm a fan too. It's amazing what you've been able to do, Kevin. And so we wanted to ask you, for other DACA creatives, you know, there's always, and I say this because my brother is one. My brother is an industrial designer. He just graduated. And he's having a hard time taking that leap from amateur to professional. You know, that almost like the war of art, you know. And how'd you get to be from, you know, an aspiring, you know, photographer to doing it full time? What was your moment?
Oof, I feel like I've been pushed around a lot, and I've went through a lot of things that, yeah, it just, these obstacles, you know, they just keep on pushing you. And just having a hardworking mom reminding me, you know, that immigrants in this country, they have to work the double, the triple. And I was always trying to remind myself, be humble, be responsible. You will probably have to do a lot of free work, but it's all about building a connection, you know, getting to know your clients, your community, building a relationship with them. And if someone within your community makes it big, then you grow with them. You know, you grow with your team, you grow with this person. Because me getting better opportunities and having better jobs, when it comes to like finding an assistant, someone that I can trust on set with me, I've used like 3 or 4 younger, you know, kids younger than me that are DACA recipients. And I always try to give that opportunity. You know, I'm like, I remember how it was for me, for someone to give me an opportunity. But if I can be, you know, that person, you know, I will be. And I try to like be some sort of, what do you call it? Some sort of teacher or
mentor.
Yes.
And I mean, for everyone who's listening, we can definitely give you a shout out because you, like, you know, we were looking at your work, and Kevin's work has been published in Vogue, one of my favorite magazines, Nylon, and many more international magazines. And you've also been recognized as an award-winning hair photographer. But some of your clients include L'Oreal Professionals, Aveda, and Balmain Paris. Like, these are huge names in the fashion industry, and you know, your work is just so impressive. You can definitely tell, like, you are very artistic and you have a talent, because not many people can do what you're doing. And you know, it just shows, like, you know, you came from a background that, you know, you didn't have anything, and now you're working with some of the well-known people here in the US and outside of the US, which is huge.
Yes.
So congrats on that.
Thank you. You know, that's something that I will tell people, you know, again, you know, just be yourself, share your story, be humble, don't forget where you come from. And I feel like things just kind of land in, you know, where they're supposed to be landing. Not all the time, but...
And I think it's so cool that you actually like got to travel outside of the country while having DACA. But were you nervous? Like, were you scared of, you know, leaving and not being able to come back?
I really need to. Okay, this is a good story. I'm glad you brought it up, because this is something for the books, and this is kind of where my team, who are U.S. citizens who don't speak Spanish, who are, let's say, privileged. You know, this is when they got to see the things that we have to go through. So, you know, I get a text. I get a call from my friend, Nicole. She is an educator. She's a hairstylist. And she was an ambassador for Balmain Paris, Le Mans Hair. And I've grown up working with her for many years. And, you know, the opportunity came for her to go to Paris and to take her own team. And she was like, Kevin, I want you. I want you to come with me. She already knew my situation. So I was like, okay, you know, let me look into it. And then I saw how much the fee was and what I needed to send. And I was like, can you get me some sort of contract that says that I will be working there, that I will be working, you know, for this brand, for you? I got the contract, no problem. I got, you know, letters of recommendation. I pay my fee. I submitted this a little bit over, let's say like three and a half months before the actual trip, before the actual date of the job. So I submitted this almost 4 months in advance and submitted it, got accepted, and then it was a whole waiting game. I bought me a flight. I was like, I bought me a flight with insurance just in case I needed to cancel. And 3 months passed. You know, it was like two months and a half, three months. The date was getting closer. Nicole had already confirmed me as a photographer. Like, the brand didn't book anyone else because they were giving that opportunity to me. So a week before the job comes and I still have no permit. My thing, my, you know, process thing online, it says still like pending, reviewing or whatever. And I'm like, Nicole, I'm stressing out. I don't think I'm going to be able to go. I was crying. I was telling all my team, I'm like, right, guys, I don't think I'm going to go. Then after I had that conversation with them the next day, I get an email and it says, oh no, I didn't get anything. I called immigration. And they were like, well, what's your reference number or your case number? I give it to them. And they pretty much read what I already knew, they read me what I was reading on the website. It was pending, it was under review. I was like, hey, listen, you know, I pretty much explained to them my situation. I was like, this is a good opportunity. And I got a good rep. And she was like, let me transfer you to a supervisor. Maybe they will be able to help you. They're usually so mean. And I was like, I was desperate. And I felt like this was such a good opportunity in my career and I was going to do whatever it took to get it. So I speak to a supervisor. First thing, you know, she tells me the same thing that the other person told me. And then she was like, let me place you on hold. And then she comes back and she says, Kevin, it looks like your advance parole, your travel document was approved over 2 weeks ago. And I was like, okay, so what are you waiting for to send it over? Like, I need to have this now. And she's like, I'm going to make, you know, she asked me, she verified my address. And she's like, I'm going to make sure it goes out today. But this could take up to 30 days for you to receive it. I was like, no, like I need it like in 7 days. So I get off the phone. I call my friends. I was like, listen, most likely I'm not going to go because they just sent the permit now. They just sent it. They said it could take up to 30 days. A day before the trip comes, I'm sad. I'm crying. I'm depressed. Nicole is stressing, trying to find another photographer and how to tell the client that I'm not going. This is the day before. So Nicole even called me. She's like, Kevin, can you just leave? And if the permit gets here while we're there, can your mom just send it? I'm like, no. You realize what's going to happen if no. I was like, no, girl, I can't. I can't do that. So I had already canceled. It was Martin Luther King week, like weekend. So I knew like mail and everything was going to be a whole mess. I remember the trip was on a Tuesday. It was Tuesday. We needed to be at the airport at 1 p.m. I checked the mail on Monday night. There was nothing. I couldn't sleep the whole night. I didn't even have a suitcase ready because I was, you know, I'm like, I'm not going. This is not for me. This is something that is just a dream, you know? So I couldn't sleep. And then I woke up at 6 a.m., had coffee. And then something in the back of my head tells me, go check the mail. I went to go check the mail at 7 a.m. And I had checked it the night before. I don't know how, why. I don't know what happened, but at 7 a.m., I opened the mail box and I see a yellow envelope. And it says U.S. Department of Homeland Security. And I ran back home. I even lost my keys. I lost the mail key. And I'm running and I'm opening as I'm running. And then I see the two advance parole letters saying, you know, that I could leave for up to like a month. And I call my friend Nicole. I'm crying. I'm like, I just got the permit, like just now, somehow. She was a target. She's like, oh my God, Kevin. She's like, I'm crying and I'm so excited for you. And she was like, I was praying all night that this moment will actually happen, and it did happen. And she was like getting me one of those European chargers. She's like, you're gonna need one of these. So I started making my suitcase. I have everything ready. And I forgot, like, with all this excitement, I had forgotten to tell my mom and the person that I was dating that I was leaving, and actually that I might not come back because Trump, the whole Trump thing was happening. And I left. When I saw those papers on my hands, I was like, this is my ticket. This is it. I go and wish for the best. So I left. And while being there in Paris, Trump goes into the White House and the whole Muslim ban happened. And then he starts saying all of these things about DACA and threatened. And I start stressing out. I think we were there for like 10 days, I want to say. We worked in Belgium. We worked in Paris. We went to the Czech Republic. I try to enjoy it. But in back of my head, the day of coming back was approaching and I was stressing. I'm in my room, you know, thinking, and all of my team members are in the living room and they're talking about what's happening in the U.S., talking about the you know, the Muslim ban, talking about Trump. That's when I realized that all of my friends, everyone in my team, had voted for Trump. I was listening to the whole conversation. Because at that time, like, I had no idea, you know? And I'm listening and I'm like, they don't know. They don't really know my situation, the things that we got to go through. So we're on the way to the airport and we're in Paris. And I gave them my passport, my travel document, and my work authorization card. And the rep, the girl who was at the front desk, she didn't know what to do with the advance parole. That was scary. All my friends got checked in and they're like waiting for me, and I see them on the other side of the glass. And Nicole is like texting me. She's like, Kevin, what's happening? Nicole always been, after everything, you know, she told me, she's like, I was thinking, what am I going to tell your mom? You get stuck here. What's going to happen to you? She was like so stressed. And I'm texting her. I'm like, no, she just doesn't know what to do, how to punch in my advance parole. Like, she doesn't, because, you know, I don't have a visa, but I have this travel document. And I guess she didn't know what to do on the drop down menu, but I didn't know that. So she had to call a supervisor. The supervisor had to call another supervisor. Anyway, they figure it out. And then we take a flight from Paris to Iceland. Everything good. Nicole, you know, she gives me a hug. She's like, I was so stressed. I'm glad you're here. We're almost there. We land in Iceland and we have to go through another immigration thing because I'm about to take a flight, a direct flight from Iceland to Denver. They wanted to make sure, you know, that I'm even allowed to be in this plane. And I was so nervous that when I spoke to someone in Iceland, I only handled my advance parole and my passport. And I forgot that I needed to also give this person my work authorization card, which is, that's what it has, the date of, you know, like an expiration date. And they pretty much wanted to see that everything wasn't expired. And there wasn't really a date on the advance parole. So also these people didn't know what to do. And they're like, you know, talking, and out of the sudden I thought, I'm like, oh, you know, I need to, I'm like, is this what you need? And they're like, oh my God, yes. And they let me in. Same thing, everyone's stressing about me. Like, is Kevin going to make it? Is Kevin going to come through? I did. Then we land in Denver. Same thing. It was like 2 a.m. in Denver. Everyone, all my friends, everyone in the team went, you know, in a designated line because they're U.S. citizens. And I had myself, like, on the first floor in a different line. I show up there. There's no one. I was the only one at that time. So everything took 5 minutes. I show up. There's the immigration person. He's like, welcome. He's like, you know, he asked me for my 2 advance paroles. Well, actually, no, he didn't ask me. I was prepared already with his documents. I handed him my 2 advance parole pages, my passport, and my work authorization card. This guy didn't know what to do with the advance at all. Like, he took my fingerprints, all fingers, took a photo, and he laughs. And, do you know, like, he literally asked me he's like, I kind of forgot, like, what is it that I need to do? I was like, 1 page is for you and 1 page is for me. Make sure to stamp it. I was like, I need this stamp. And he's like, he asked me, like, where was I coming from? And I was like, well, I just took a flight from Iceland. I was in Paris. And he's like, oh, okay. So you work here in Denver. I'm like, sure, I work here in Denver. I'm like, I've been here my whole life, but yes, let's say I work here in Denver. And that was it. It, you know, took me 5 minutes. Once I was in Denver, went through it, got to the airport. I mean, went outside of the airport. There was a lot of protests happening because I don't know if you guys remember, they had a lot of people, you know, at the airports.
Let me ask you something here. And you know what? I really appreciate you detailing the whole advanced parole situation, because it's a topic that I think a lot of DACA recipients are interested in now that, you know, the Supreme Court's made a positive decision today. But let me ask you about the trip more in depth, you know, and I want to talk, and I know there were stressful moments at the airport, but I want to ask you about the beautiful moments. What was Paris like?
I had the best time ever. Seeing the tower, that's the first thing we did. We booked an Airbnb close to the tower, which we were all very excited, but then we got sick of it. You know, we're like, oh my God, this tower again at night with like the lights and stuff.
Good to know.
But, you know, like my whole time, I'm like, am I like, felt like I was dreaming, to be honest. Because, you know, you grow up with this mentality that you never leave the country because you're not going to come back. And I'm like, I just did. What am I going to do? I'm like, I was scared, but I was not scared. It was very hard to enjoy time there.
I bet, yeah.
What was your favorite memory? I mean, you said you traveled the Czech Republic.
So we went to Paris, and everyone speaking French. We went to the, you know, to the grocery store to get, you know, our stuff for vacation, for our week. And Nicole speak a little, you know, a little bit of French. So I literally felt like when I had just arrived to the U.S., like, I don't understand anything, like, you know, this is weird money, like, I don't know how much I'm giving you, like, just, other than that, you know, we were there for a job, but we try to enjoy ourselves. We had a lot of wine, a lot of bread. Every time we went, everywhere we went to, it was always wine and bread and pizza, and it was so good. It was great. It was so cold. I think it was like in February when we were there, so it was really cold. It was very gray, but I got to see a lot of immigrants on the street. You know, a lot of immigrants begging for money. I don't know if you guys remember when the whole thing with Syria was happening, and a lot of people were like flying away from their country. I saw a lot of people in the streets with their kids, like, you know, in mattresses. Like, Paris, it sounds like this glamorous city, but I feel like I couldn't keep my eyes away from seeing everything else. That was so present about these people flying and immigrating to France, and seeing how people, they were just walking by them and ignoring them, you know, like they didn't exist. That was really hard to watch. But again, you know, I was in that mentality that I was very present of my surroundings, and I was seeing the bad, but I was also seeing the good. And then the day of the job came. I really enjoyed it. That was my dream. I was backstage with the Victoria's Secret models, which I didn't know because I just take photos and I don't really pay attention to who's famous and who's not. And I remember I turned to Nicole and I was like, why are these girls so rude? Like, I just asked her if I could take a photo. And Nicole is like, do you realize who you're talking to? And I'm like, no. So it was great. It was great. After the job, the owner of the company that we were working for took us to a really nice dinner. It was like this elegant, you know, restaurant in Paris, you know, with like very romantic lighting and expensive dishes that didn't fill me up because I was still hungry, but I didn't want to ask.
You want the pupusas?
Yes. My God, I'm choking. That was a good one. What am I eating right now? Like, it does. So it's good. It was good. It was a good experience.
I mean, I think you had the time of your life, and you know, just like, you know, you were saying that, you know, the people, some of the people that you're working with and your team, you know, they had voted for Trump, and they probably, you know, weren't agreeing with, you know, DACA or like what was going on with our situation, but yet they were working alongside with someone that wasn't the situation. And at the time, I mean, even though they didn't know about me, like about your personal situation, it's like you were shining because of your work. And that's why I say, like, being a, like, we talked to, we interviewed yesterday this wonderful girl from California, Christelle. And one thing that struck out when she said, you know, being undocumented will never define me. And, you know, obviously, like, you know, you being in your situation, you didn't let that define you. You were doing your job, and you were hired for a reason because you were one of the best. And that's why you made it all the way to Paris.
Yes. No, I completely agree with that. I know that a lot of the stuff that I've accomplished, it's because, you know, people say that it's talent or I just have a good eye. But, you know, let's say that's how it is. I still like to use this, you know, to bring awareness to all of us, and just for people to be aware that it can just be anyone, you know, it can be anyone that's close to them. When on my flight back, when I was in the, you know, flying back to the US from Europe, that's when I was thinking about that video that you guys saw on YouTube. I was like, I need to do something. And I was like, what can I do? What can I do for people to pay attention? How am I going to do it? And I was like, that's it. You know, I'm going to make a video. I'm going to talk about it. And I'm going to utilize footage that I've collected throughout the years, working with all these models and all these hairstylists and makeup artists and all these people within the industry. And I remember I posted it, and, you know, within minutes, I start getting like emails. I start getting messages on Facebook, text messages, my agent, the person that I was working with, that I had a contract with in Denver at that time, she reaches out. She's like, "Kevin, I'm crying. I had no idea. You know, we're here for you." Everyone was resharing that video, and it was just like a little snowball effect. Even though, you know, for some time that year, it kind of got to me. I'm not going to lie. It got to me because I started to being introduced as, "Oh, Kevin, the guy that's under DACA." You know, it's like I stopped being a photographer for some time. Like people, all the conversations that I was having with new clients and new people that I was meeting, it was about that. And, which was good. You know, that's what I've wanted to do. But then I was trying to look for some sort of balance that I didn't want to be recognized by that.
So I wanted to ask you really quick that you know, this podcast for me is my coming out party. And I've been in my career and I haven't said a thing, you know, to anyone. Do you think in the end, I mean, you've been out for some time in regards to DACA. So, you know, has it been a positive thing for you? What advice would you have for me or for others who would want to come out with their story?
Be ready. You have to be ready mentally. And you will know when it's time, because I put my face, my voice out there, and it felt the right thing for me to do. And I, at that time, I feel like I'm a stronger person now mentally. But even though years ago, that's what I thought, that's how I felt. And let me tell you, like, I did a lot of live interviews for like Telemundo, for Univision, for Fox, for whoever wanted to interview me and give me a platform to speak and put my face out there. I did it. And I read and I got a lot of comments and emails that made me, they put me down. They did get to me, but, you know, just make sure you're surrounded by people that support you and love you and are there for you, because you're going to need that. So maybe now it's not as much as before, I want to think, but there's always people out there that are going to say something, you know, that's going to hurt.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, now as we're, you know, we're coming, today obviously was a big day for everyone in the DACA community. You know, the Supreme Court decided that, you know, they're not going to get rid of it. And, you know, we want to kind of get your reaction of, you know, I bet you were like super anxious to find out like the decision that they were going to make. You know, I think everyone was kind of like biting their nails and seeing like, oh my gosh, is this going to be like, are they going to end it or are they going to continue it? What was like your whole reaction to the news today?
It obviously felt like this is something. This is a victory. But then again, it's not a permanent victory, you know? But I think it's good to remember how long we've been fighting for this. And that the DACA program helped a lot of us, a lot of young immigrants, and not just us, but our parents as well. This is good. I feel like a lot of us, because even me sometimes, I forget that I'm in this boat. I think it's good to always keep that in mind. It's really hard not to be scared and not to be afraid. You know, like that's the slogan. That's usually what we say, undocumented and unafraid. But again, you know, I'm happy that you guys are building this platform. I'm excited to see how it's going to develop. And I'm excited that I was one of the first ones to, you know, share my story with you guys. With that being said, I'm trying to put together another project. I'm trying to build kind of like a photography book. And I'm calling it 9 Minutes of a Dreamer, and it's dedicated to, you know, to all the dreamers. And it's like a 100-page thing that I'm putting together, inspired by, you know, our culture, our nightmares and the dreams. So I'm excited that you guys took this initiative to build this platform, because I think it's very important to do this and to keep creating awareness. Share your stories in whatever industry you work in, utilize it. Utilize it as a platform to get to people, to reach out to people. And you know, we never know. I feel like I want to think that I've been able to change, you know, people's mentality or misconceptions about all of this. So it's good, you know, little by little.
Yeah, exactly. I do want to say thank you, man. I think what you did made a difference today, and made a difference in the decision. So with that, you know, I'd love to close with the question of where is Kevin Alexander going to be in 10 years?
In 10 years. Oh my God. That's 10 years. I don't know. You know, I want to enjoy myself. I want to keep enjoying myself. I think we've been in this country for so long that we're craving just to get out. But then this, you know, we gotta also remember that we're still in a pandemic situation, and we also don't know how things are gonna develop. But yeah, you know, I believe I'm still gonna be doing what I love, which is photography, and maybe not the same type of photography, but doing something that I love, enjoying myself, hopefully feeling like you finally belong to society somehow. With this whole situation, we've learned to not get too ahead of ourselves. It's good to dream, but I feel like with me, a lot of the time I go like day by day, you know, because you don't really know what's gonna happen with this program. But you know, let's keep dreaming. And I usually tell people, the world is huge, you know, and if it's not here, it's this can be anywhere.